We weren't doing real good at finding the thief, but I had a notion he might be up there in Sanders' carriage house, laughing at Hubert and Delphinium and maybe laughing at me. So we headed for the north side of Main Street, where all them comfortable dudes lived, the ones that were always telling me I didn't know my job. My thinking was that Iceberg and Luke the Butcher and maybe the cashier had pulled a heist right there, getting in with Delphinium, getting the bank key, blowing the safe, and then hiding all that cash and gold right there in the safest hiding place in town, the banker's own carriage house. After a while, they'd split up the loot and get out.
You think LaRouche is up there too,
with all that swag?
I don't know what I think. My ma used to say quit thinking and start looking, so that's what I'm fixing to do. Maybe we'll nail the crooks right in Sanders' own yard. It sure was dark. Me and Rusty got over there to where the Sanderses had their big house and stared into the night. There wasn't no light, not in the house or the carriage house. I'ma wake her up.
That's not gonna get you friends at the courthouse.
I've been wanting to talk to Delphinium for days. I got a feeling she's the mama spider in this web.
Don't you think we should just go over to the carriage house? Talk with the butcher or whoever's there?
Women got the say-so. That's what my ma always said.
You mind if I go home to bed?
You're coming with me. If she shoots, she'll need to hit both of us.
Go away.
Sheriff Pickens, ma'am. We need to talk.
I'm not available.
Now's as good a time as any.
I have a migraine headache.
I suppose you get one most every night, ma'am. Talking with me will make her go away real fast.
You're an idiot, Pickens. Go back to your pigsty.
Ma'am, no door's good enough to stop me if I take a notion to break it. And I got that notion. So you go light a lamp and get yourself settled in the parlor real sweet and we'll talk.
You are loathsome. All right, make it quick. My head is throbbing.
I hear a lot of women get headaches every night, ma'am. But I ain't married, so it's all gossip. She opened the door, a kerosene lamp in her hand, and we followed her to the gloomy parlor. She looked haughtier than ever, peering down her white nose at us. She was wearing a huge white tent, which hid her bedroom slippers.
Where's Hubert?
Cleaning up a mess at the bank, Mrs. Sanders. He'll tell you about it when he returns. There's been some trouble. Now, where's them two fellers out in the carriage house?
You are referring to Mr. Berg and Mr. Luke, whatever his surname is. I discharged them this evening. No one is in the carriage barn.
Discharged?
They failed me. I sent them packing. They were no good.
What'd you hire them to do, ma'am?
Put you out of office. You're the sole remaining obstacle to scrubbing doubtful white and pure.
Put me out of office?
I told them by whatever means. Just do it and make it permanent. They're both incompetent. It ought to be no great task to drive a dunce like you clear out of Puma County and maybe even Wyoming.
Well, what did you ask them to do, ma'am?
I told you. Drive you out. Get rid of you. Embarrass you. Offend you. I paid them good money for it and didn't get a return on my investment. You're permitting sin to flourish in Doubtful. People drink spirits. People gamble away their every cent. Evil card sharks ruin good families and other things. Men! It's entirely the moral failing of men. I wish to spare Hubert further temptation.
He's tempted?
He's the worst sinner. I will cleanse Doubtful of every temptation, and then maybe we shall find peace in my household.
Worst sinner, is he?
I am done with you.
How'd he sin? Whoa! She slapped me. I imagine I said something that set her off, but I sure didn't know what. I didn't mean any offense, ma'am.
Out! Get out!
It's been a pleasant visit. She sure got set off by something. Wish I knew what.
Never did understand women. Damnedest mystery on the planet.
I can understand my mother, but I never could understand any of the rest. Maybe Delphinium will drop by and explain it to me.
There's too many women in Doubtful.
Once they come in, there's no escaping. We're stuck.
We should keep them out.
Too late for that.
You think we should go check her carriage barn?
I steered that way, and we scouted the stalls and found nothing in the moonlight. I climbed a ladder to the hayloft, expecting a bullet at any moment. A loft door let in more moonlight, and I peered around some, but they'd cleared out. I poked some old hay and kicked it loose here and there, but it was just hay. No gold or greenbacks as far as I could see. Rusty, he climbed up and joined me, and we pushed a lot of loose hay around and found nothing. You think we've covered it?
No banknotes in here.
and no robbers neither. We climbed down and cut across moonlit lawn and got out of there without getting slapped again.
Well, we found out what we need to know, though. We got two crooks to hunt down. An ex-sheriff and a butcher who's real smart with a toad stabber.
I ain't sure we do. Someone smart about using nitro blew that safe.
Well, you got any other suspects?
Nope. Afraid I don't. I wasn't real sure we were chasing the right gents, but tracking them was better than sitting on our butts. That's when we ran into Hubert, heading back to his house.
Well?
We've been up talking to your wife.
She didn't have a headache?
She said she fired them two in your carriage barn.
I didn't know she hired them.
She said she did all right, to get me out of office.
Well, Sheriff, you shouldn't take her literally. She was just using figures of speech.
Well, her figure was hidden under a tent, and she slugged me.
I am speechless.
You got the place cleaned up?
I'll let my cashier LaRousse clean up the broken glass, but everything else is done. The bank was robbed of $11,592. But there's more. The safe is ruined and can be replaced only with great difficulty from Pittsburgh. And that means I'm at another $790. I've lost $12,000, and you're harassing Delphinium.
She said getting rid of me was to keep you from sin.
She said that, did she?
She said I'm the main obstacle. Get rid of me and you'll be rescued from all the temptations we got around here. I don't know what you need rescuing from it, but it sounds pretty bad.
You understand, Pickens, what it means to have a wife who has a headache every night?
I ain't ever been married, sir, but it sure sounds lonely.
Lonely is as good a word as any. Mrs. Sanders has had a migraine every night since our wedding day. Good night, sleep tight, but don't let the bed bugs bite. But if they do, get a shoe and hit them all over till they're black and blue.
Oh, he's a pretty nice feller. I don't think he married real well.
When we got back to the sheriff's office, there was a little feller sitting on the steps.
I'm glad I found you. I feared the worst.
Feared?
This town is a buzz. It's aflame with rumors.
I unlocked and let him in, lifted the smoke-coated chimney of the lamp and struck a lucifer. Rusty, how come you ain't cleaned these chimneys?
Because I wasn't your deputy until a bit ago.
Is the Grand Luxembourg Folly safe?
Why do you ask that?
There were lamps lit in the bank. One does not see lamps in banks at night.
What's that got to do with your company?
Ralston went over there to make a night deposit of our receipts, and saw Sanders back in there, and disorder, papers littering the floor. So he brought his deposit back, and now there's no safe place to keep it.
Safe got blown. Got cleaned out, too. But we've got some badasses in mind.
That's truly bad news. When did it happen?
Middle of the second act.
During the show?
Wasn't many people from around here on the street. They was all in there watching your vivid tablets.
Tableau vivant. Live scenes.
Whatever. Bare babes, if you ask me. They used blasting oil, nitro, and blew Sanders' safe door open and made off with the loot. It might have been an inside job. Them doors were locked.
Stolen. Ah, yes. Ripped away from the rightful owners, including two box office receipts we were euchred out of by that miserable excuse for a judge. But you have prospects.
Yep, the watch and ward hired guns.
I like that. I might invent a scene in the Follies and call it the watch and ward hired guns. Great box office.
Well, we'll nail them. We got two good suspects, and they ain't going far.
Will we be safe leaving Doubtful?
Safe? Oh, you're closing tomorrow, right?
We're pulling out right after the curtain falls. We'll be 10 miles toward Casper before we camp. Schedules, you know. You pick up the pieces and keep on going and open up and get your show going.
You'll leave a man behind here.
Pinky Pearl, best advance man in the business. Now I'll have none. I'll need to hire someone to set us up. Someone to book rooms, get cash advances for salary, all of that. I'll be leaving a piece of my heart here in Doubtful, sir. Take good care of that grave.
I'll do more than that. I've got a good idea who pushed the toad stabber into your advance, man. And pretty quick, we'll be bolting together the Puma County gallows.
Ah, mon ami. That brings me to a delicate matter. There is lawlessness here. In the space of a few days, there has been murder, theft, a holdup, the most foul destruction of your trusted horse, and more. My poor company will ride without protection into the night after the curtain comes down. Our bags will be in our coaches, the gear in the wagons, and we will be taking our share of the box office, all save for Ralston's portion. How safe will we be? And where can we get help? And what's to stop these outlaws from stopping us, stealing what little we possess?
Well, I'll escort you to the Puma County line. Maybe I can find one of my former deputies to take you the rest of the way. I'm thinking of a fella named DeGraff. I'll talk to one if you want, but they'll want some pay for it.
But Sheriff, we have so little. We lost the gross from 2 showings in court. I can't afford to pay such knights in shining armor. We will be naked to these bandits.
I guess them gals are used to that.
Oh, Sheriff, you are a card, truly a card. And maybe the 2 of clubs, eh?
The next morning, word of the bank heist was all over town. A mess of people were standing around eyeing the bank, which was closed. There wasn't any way a body could get some cash out of his account or put some in. There wasn't any way a merchant could load up with greenbacks to make change. There wasn't any way a boss man could get a payroll together to give to his workers. No way a rancher could pay his cowboys. No way a woman could get funds to buy groceries. No way Turk, the livery hostler, could buy hay or get paid for renting a stall and feed for an animal. It was as if Doubtful had sort of croaked. That $11,000, that was more money than the town used in a month. And now there was nothing. Sanders was in there, but staying hid. His clerks were in there too. But the bank was shut tight, and no one was saying if it would ever open, and whether a lot of folks were out of a lot of money, or if Doubtful itself would survive long without the cash that goes into all buying and selling. I got waylaid by all sorts of people with a mess of questions.
You get them robbers?
I'm sure working on it.
Is there any cash left in there?
No greenbacks that I know of. Some coins, I think.
The gold, too?
All of it.
How come you're not chasing the crooks?
You tell me who they are and where they're going, and I'll be hot on their tail.
It's that theater company. We never should have let them in here.
You tell me who, and I'll bring them in.
You should round up the lot, search everything they got, and then you'd find it.
Not a bad idea, but I think Judge Rampart might find some fault with it.
He's not worth spit. You arrest them all, and you'll get it back fast.
I'm fixing to get a posse going soon as I've got more to work with. There were a mess of conversations like that. But mostly, people were plumb scared. Take down the bank, take down Doubtful. But even as the crowds began predicting doom for the whole county, the storekeepers were making other arrangements. People began writing checks and IOUs. Merchants made change with chits. Bottles of red eye became a sort of money. A woman might get groceries for some red eye. A merchant might offer a bottle of rum as change for a 20. And a few gold coins came out of hiding, and that helped some. But the town was mostly paralyzed, and people were not far from forming a vigilance committee and going after anyone they thought might be carrying that loot. I thought maybe I could improve on that a little. I told people about my plan to form a posse, and pretty quick I had 30, 40 men ready to ride. I thought that might be an improvement on some lynchings. My main interest was tracking down Luke the Butcher and Ike Berg. It looked to me like the former sheriff of Medicine Bow County had gone bad, and the pair had pulled off the heist after the old gal had fired him. I found Turk hiding in his office. Did Ike Berg come around here, and was the butcher with him?
He did. He got his nag yesterday. I haven't seen that deputy. He don't own a horse.
Berg say where he was going?
Not a word.
Did he have bags? A pack horse?
No, he saddled up, tied a small bundle behind the candle, and rode out.
When was that?
Middle of yesterday.
I'll need a horse tonight. I'm taking the show people as far as the county line.
They paid me, say that for them. They'll be loading wagons before the last show's over.
That's when I want a horse. Back early in the morning.
We sure didn't have no trouble till that opera house opened up.
That was true. There'd been big trouble in Doubtful from the day the first show arrived. I discovered advance men pasting up the bills for the next show all over town. They'd brush some sort of flour paste on the back of a show bill, post the bill, and then brush it down real good, and it'd stick there for a while. There would be 3 dark days, and then the next show would roll into Doubtful. It was called the Royal Arabian Nights, and it looked real interesting. There was a mess of fellas in turbans pictured on there, and pretty girls in sort of misty outfits. An intimate look at the harem of Sheikh Barbus, with 14 wives and 17 children and 12 eunuchs. I didn't know what them eunuchs were, but Sammy Upward would know. I sure didn't want any around Doubtful. We had enough trouble without 12 eunuchs on the loose. I studied on the words, wondering what was coming. Belly dancers, sword swallowers and fire eaters, 2 jugglers, 2 masked executioners would show a beheading, not for the squeamish. I sure wanted a front seat for all that. I didn't know if I'd get paid, not that the county's cash got stole, but if I could get in, I wanted to see all that stuff. I never met a cowboy who could do half that stuff. I headed over to the Last Chance Saloon looking for Sammy Upward. He was there all right, with a baseball bat, ready to clobber 2 cowboys that were starting a ruckus. You fellers, you get out of town.
Try me.
I'll turn you into a eunuch.
Huh? You hear that? The sheriff's gonna do that?
A eunuch?
The cowboys both reached for their privates and backed out of there, holding tight to their pants. Well, that was pretty good. I watched them leave and checked to see that they got on their nags, which they did. Sammy, what's a eunuch?
Cotton, if you don't know, I ain't gonna tell you.
Well, I never heard of one, but it sure scared off them 2 dudes.
Well, all cowboys are eunuchs. I mean, you get sitting on a horse all day, every day, and that's what you get. Messy eunuchs. Cotton, you ever see children on a ranch?
Well, how many days before you get turned into one?
Oh, sometimes it only takes 24 hours.
How do I know?
Oh, you know what, Cotton? You could ask Belle over to your board now. She'll help you figure it out.
You sure that's proper? Ask her to check my eunuchs?
Yeah, oh yeah. You just ask her.
I'll do that. Have you seen Luke the Butcher? I want to drag his butt over to my jailhouse and practice some butchering on him.
I heard he's blown town.
That's what I'm worried about. I want him. If you get word of him, would you let me know?
Did he do the bank heist?
I'm gonna ask him, and he won't be polite.
Did that lousy lawman go too? Because that's what I heard. Old Lady Sanders kicked his ass out of the county.
Sammy was sure full of rumors. I don't know where they came from, but he had collected his share of them. By the time I got over to the Opera House, the watch and ward people were waving their signs again, and the Variety Company was sliding through the stage door for the final show in Doubtful, Wyoming. I didn't see Delphinium Sanders, and could well understand why. Her husband's bank was broke. I stayed close, determined to prevent trouble. But after a while, it became obvious that there would be no trouble. Few people were showing up to buy tickets from Ralston. There was no line. When there was a break, I asked him about it.
It's the bank heist. No one wants to spend a dime. They don't know when they'll see cash. Clerks don't know when they'll get another brown envelope. It's going to be a long, dull night.
I hadn't thought of that. The bank robbery was shutting down all business in town, including that of the Grand Luxembourg Follies. I saw another 20 or 30 people duck into the opera house as the piano started up. This time, the watch and warders simply vanished. Previous evenings, they had lingered, ready to embarrass theater-goers during the intermission. But not this final eve. They went home. Ralston did his books early and eyed me.
There's not $100 here. Oh, if this keeps up, I'll fold. I can't run an opera house on thin air.
But what about the next show?
It's not well attended. They've had troubles getting booked. They may run into more trouble here.
I've never seen a sword swallower.
No, but he really does it. Runs the thing right down his throat.
There must be easier ways to make a buck. Like fire eating.
Well, how about executioners? There's going to be some beheadings on the stage.
I don't care how many heads roll. What I want is the harem. Lots of girls in the harem.
More likely old broads who've got varicose veins. They'll wear a lot of pancake.
Sounds like a tough life.
Show business? Writing novels, playing music? Those are guaranteed to break your piggy bank. For everyone who gets lucky, 1,000 starve.
Why do it?
Because we're all bonkers.
I couldn't hardly argue with that. When the show was deep into its final act, I headed over to Turk's livery barn to saddle up a horse. I found the company teamsters loading up their wagons and coaches. They would roll as fast as they could break down the sets in the opera house and get the cast into the coaches. You got a nag for me?
Saddle him yourself, and if the county don't pay me, I'll come after you.
He sure was grouchy. But everyone in Doubtful was grouchy. And there were people there in the dark, waiting for the show to roll away. They believed that somehow or other, the variety show was walking out of town with all their cash. So I wandered through that bunch, just seeing who wore sidearms and who didn't. There were a few well-armed fellers out there, in spite of a ban on firearms inside city limits. I approached the head teamster, a feller named Jeff. There's trouble brewing here.
We're used to it.
I'm hoping you'll get these coaches over to the opera house and leave town from there just as fast as you load up.
They follow. They always follow.
You run into trouble regularly?
Sure. They pull their revolvers and hold us up. About when we're ready to roll, they surround Jardine's coach and tell him to toss the money bag.
Well, then what?
Jardine always has a few real heavy ones, well tied up and hard to get open, and he pitches them to the ground, and the town people always haul them off and we roll away.
He gives up his money that easily?
There's a couple of real greenbacks on top of each bag and a lot of worthless paper underneath.
You show business fellers can teach us all a trick or two.
Just let it happen. There'll be no trouble.
No, I won't let it happen. If anyone attempts to rob your company, they'll have to deal with me, and I shoot straight. Things were getting ugly fast. I hurried back to the office and collected the double-barreled sawed-off 12-gauge, checked the loads, and hurried back to Turk's barn. There were growing numbers of townspeople collecting there, watching the show wagons and coaches and teams that the teamsters were harnessing. Half of them were good folks I knew well, but they was looking pretty ornery, so I wanted to talk some. The first feller I found wearing a six-gun was the mayor, George Waller. You come to watch the show pull out?
No. I've come to keep the show from pulling out.
You have a problem?
They've got every cent in Doubtful and are making off with it.
Why do you say that?
Someone busted the bank, and it has to be that outfit.
You got any evidence of it?
You'll see. They aren't rolling until they dump every cent they got on the ground right there.
Now what about money they earn from selling tickets and doing the show?
Every cent stays here, and that's how it's gonna be. And don't you interfere, because if you do, you're dead meat.
I suppose you think you're taking back what got took, but them show people might think you're stealing what they earned doing that show.
They cleaned out this town, and they're not moving until every cent comes back.
You figure they blew the bank safe last night, middle of their show?
They had it done, and that stolen money's in the wagon somewhere, or it's gonna be. We're keeping it, and we're putting Doubtful back on its feet.
So you're gonna hold up the theater company, right?
You stay out of it, Pickens. It's gonna happen, and if you stop it, you'll find a gun stuck in your back faster than you can wonder who's about to blow you off.
I guess that's all part of your mayor duties, right, Waller? Staging an armed robbery? That'll get you reelected.
You stay out of this, Cotton, or you'll be 6 feet under.
I see that as a threat to a peace officer, and don't call me Cotton. I got that name hung on me and it makes me mad. I'm keeping the peace, Mr. Mayor, even if you ain't. And if anyone dies, you'll find yourself in the dock for murder. That's all I'm gonna say. I guess I'll say one more thing, Waller. There's 12 buckshot in each barrel.
Back away now, these Belgians kick!
Jeff started pushing all them virtuous citizens back from the caravan. Down the street at the opera house, the show was let now, and the first people hit the street. Jeff nodded, and the freighters, each team led by a teamster, steered them lumbering wagons that way to load up the sets and all that. The coaches would be next. The Follies ladies would get in, and the show would be on the road. Or so I hoped. But even as the freighters headed for the stage door, so did the mob. It turned into a big procession, coaches and wagons, with crowds of armed men on either side. This here was getting serious. The coaches arrived, three of them to carry the cast. But those fellers pulled up in front of the theater, not at the stage door in the alley. They were good Concords, hired out of Cheyenne for this tour, driven by some good old boys who could spit a few yards. Now the crowd shifted away from the stage door, where the Teamsters were loading sets and props into the freight wagons. The townspeople, they surged right up to the maroon coaches and waited in the flickering light of a lamp at the box office. It was pretty dark. I knew what they were waiting for, and pretty quick it happened. One by one, those pretty gals, wearing light dresses against the summer heat, climbed into the coaches and settled there, some on the jump seats. The crowd watched them, but didn't do nothing. No one was waving a watch and ward sign at them. The gals looked real subdued and a little afraid, so I made a point of standing between them and that mob. There was one empty coach up front with a team of good matched blacks to draw it, and that's where the crowd was drifting now that the gals were all settled. The theater doors were open, and I could see lights bobbing in there, and then the maestro appeared. Alphonse Desjardins, wearing that black silk stovepipe, a little feller in a black suit and starched white shirt. He paused, stared at the mob, and then steadily paced toward the coach. He wasn't carrying any satchel. He wasn't carrying a thing. Just a little feller, head of that show, getting ready to roll.
Told it right there, Jardine.
George, you put that gun away. Now there were 20, 30 revolvers out. If shooting started, a lot of people would get hurt, and it was getting real bad by the second. There were armed men on both sides of the coaches, and a few out in front. So the coaches were surrounded by town merchants with revolvers in their fists.
You don't leave here alive until you drop the loot.
Good sir, there's only a trifle. We made little, and it went to paying for the theater and your hotels.
You got the bank money. There's gold and greenbacks in there. 11,000 worth.
My friend, come search. Take your pick, all the coaches.
No, Waller, you ain't gonna search. You ain't gonna rob this company of one nickel, and you gonna lower them revolvers before a lot of innocent people get hurt.
He's welcome to search anywhere. My friends, let this man look wherever he wishes for the gold.
All right, George, you heard him. You look around in there and in the boot and in the next ones, and when you're done, you tell this crowd to go home. Waller, he sensed he had won, which is what I wanted. He headed for Jardine's coach, climbed up to check out the boot, and probed the interior.
That gold somewhere!
Waller started for the next two coaches, and them gals all got out and stood there looking mighty scared. They were so pretty that half those shooters were staring at the gals, which maybe was a good thing.
These boots are full of luggage.
You ready to let this show leave town?
I want to search every trunk.
You got any evidence these people robbed the bank?
Who else?
Let them search the trunks. These are fine, upstanding citizens, and they've welcomed us to Doubtful. And now we welcome them to our underwear and corsets and dainties.
If Waller started pulling out trunks and pawing all the little undies of those showgirls, he'd sure make a spectacle of himself. And he knew it.
Gold is heavy, Mr. Mayor. Lift those trunks.
Waller did pull out a couple and rattled them and put them back. He was defeated. Maybe the Grand Luxembourg Follies would leave town in one piece. Maybe the citizens would go home in one piece. Maybe I would, too. But I was ready to turn them all into Swiss cheese if that's what it took. It's a funny thing how a mob leaks willpower sometimes. This had gone from a murderous mob to a sort of sheepish one. It was still a powder keg, though, with crazy armed men on both sides of those coaches.
All right, you people let the company go. This is over. These people have to head out.
They let it happen. Jardine, he looked around, invited some of them gals to ride with him, and the Jehus sitting on the boxes snapped lines over croups, and them three coaches slowly rolled into the night, and the freighters followed. I'd promised to escort them as far as the county line, but I'd catch up in a bit. There was nothing slower than a big outfit like that.
Well, George, you got a law that says it's illegal to wear sidearms in Doubtful. You want to turn yourself in?
Go to hell, Sheriff.
I could pinch the rest of them. I got a list in my head. It's your law. You put her on the books for me to enforce. It's a good law. Pretty near 20 people might have died, and a mess more would be hurt real bad this night. The law's there to prevent that.
Go to hell, Pickens. I still think the loot's in that company. This town's ruined. There's hardly change enough to keep an ice cream parlor in business.
You got proof? Some witnesses? You give me proof that they robbed the bank and I'll go after them. They ain't a mile out of town.
Well, it's good riddance. We'll close down that opera house and maybe that'll keep our money safe.
I wasn't gonna argue with a man whose brain was fried, so I just cut loose. Turk was waiting for me over at the livery barn with a saddled nag.
I hope they get robbed. They cleaned out Doubtful and we need it back. Now, you get that nag shot up, you pay.
This plug is so rank it deserves to be shot up and eaten by magpies.
You deserve your fate. This here nag is a miracle horse. He's ready with a miracle anytime you ask.
What's his name?
His name's Jesus Mary Joseph. I didn't name him. The fella that sold him to me named him.
He erupted and started crow-hopping, buffing, whirling, and trying to bite my leg. And it was getting to the point where I'd either bail off of him or he'd kill me.
Jesus Mary Joseph!
Now that was the dangest thing. That miracle nag, he quit all his hightailing and settled right down real quiet. I can't explain it. All I'd done was shout his name. It was sort of prayerful, though. Maybe he answered my prayer. It didn't take long for me to figure out that Jesus Mary Joseph was the smoothest and most eager and most friendly nag I'd ever sat upon. I rode out into a quiet June night. The Variety Company was somewhere ahead, lumbering along at the pace of the freight wagons. It would be a long while before they got to the railroad, and they would have to pass through Medicine Bow County, where Ike Berg had been the law, to get there. I wish my badge stretched down to the tracks, but it quit at the county line, and that was where I had to cut loose. The barn sour nag wanted to hightail it back to Turk's, but I held him steady. I wondered how them teamsters leading the freight wagons and Jehu's on the coaches figured out the road. They had been moving the company around for a long while and seemed to have good night vision. I knew that trouble lay ahead, and it was in my Puma County, and that the Variety Show was in trouble, and that I'd have to kick this barn sour livery horse into action. I encouraged the beast with my heels, since I wasn't wearing spurs, and the horse crow-hopped and carried on like a spoiled brat, and I whacked him harder, and he took off real good, having met his master at last, and we sailed through the inky dark toward them stray bullets. After a while, I did spot a lantern waving ahead, and slowed real careful, not wanting to be mistook. In fact, it was still mighty black. So I just slid off that ornery plug and walked quietly toward the Variety Company train. They were stopped there. The rear coach was somewhat behind the rest. I studied the scene. There was but a single lamp, and some people milling around near a stagecoach, and something on the ground, and nothing else to see. It was blacker than the inside of an ink bottle. "Hello ahead!" Those shadowy figures turned. "This here's the sheriff!" No one responded. I had all the advantage, being in pitch dark, so I edged in, keeping my six gun handy. But I didn't expect to shoot anyone, since I wouldn't know who I was about to perforate. That livery horse, he liked being led. I knew the type. He hated to carry a burden, but didn't mind being hauled around on a string. I know a lot of folks like that horse. They'd do anything not to work, anything but carry a load. I studied the crowd ahead before the lantern light fell on me, and I couldn't see any drawn sidearms. All right now, what's the trouble? Now I could get a good look. There was someone stretched out, and even before I could make out the details, I knew who it was. Alphonse Desjardins, the proprietor of the Grand Luxembourg Follies, was lying there. And most of the rest were the show gals and a few teamsters, and they were staring at me as I edged in. Jardine was dead. The bleak lantern light revealed a ruined face where a bullet had ended the little feller's earthly life. The gals, they were real quiet. None was weeping. They looked more than a little scared. The teamsters just stared. I spotted Ambrosia, star of the Follies, with a shawl wrapped around her. "Tell me.
Some men stopped us."
Two teamsters standing next to Ambrosia looked at me and nodded. "How many?"
"Just two, both with shotguns."
"One skinny and one built like a block?"
"And masked."
"They knew which coach Mr. Jardine was in and went straight to it and pulled him out. They simply shot him, like they were waiting for him."
Killed him? How?
One pulled a revolver and shot him, just like that. Nothing said.
No one even talked? Jardine didn't?
Oh, Mr. Jardine, he asked what these gents wanted, and they didn't reply. They just fired on him.
I gradually got the whole story. Jardine's stagecoach was last in the caravan, and two bandits rode out of a pitch-black night, closed in beside the coach, jammed revolvers through the curtain, and told the Jehu to stop. The driver stopped the team. The bandits asked Jardine to step out. The gals with him were terrified. They heard a shot in the dark and the thud of a body. One bandit kept the driver covered, while the other one pitched satchels out of the boot, got down to a false bottom in the boot, pulled that out, and removed something or other from under it. I got most of this from the driver, who talked in brief bursts. He said he didn't expect to live more than a few more moments, but they let him go, loaded some satchels onto a spare pack animal, and rode into the blackness. The whole robbery was amazing because there was no moon, nothing but a little starlight, and required night vision of a sort that few people possessed. The rest of the caravan didn't know what was happening and continued onward for another 200 or 300 yards, and then knew something had happened. I needed a description of them two robbers, thinking they were probably Iceberg and Luke the Butcher, but I got as many descriptions as there were witnesses, and I sure couldn't get anyone to say that one was skeleton thin and the other was built like a butcher block. They were just a pair of males with black bandanas over their noses and nothing else to identify them. No one could even say what sort of nags the bandits had or how many. One thing was plain. They knew Jardine and knew he had a hiding place under the false bottom of the boot of that last stagecoach and knew there was something in it and knew that if they killed the little maestro of that show, the whole company would fall apart. And that was exactly right. It probably was Iceberg and his crony, but damned if I could prove it. I didn't have a single reliable witness. Them two rode off into the blackness, direction unknown, and I wouldn't find a track until daylight, and I'd be lucky to find any at all. They could go anywhere on the compass. Meanwhile, the rest of the company and the Teamsters and Jehus all collected around that lamp and eyed the feller who created this show. I think I've got to get you in this coach to come back to Doubtful with me. The gals and the driver, they just stared. All of you on this coach. I think we better go back there. We got some things to do there, and I want to get statements.
But who'll pay for us?
Jardine's estate. They stared. There wasn't an estate. These coaches were leased. Finally, one of the Teamsters, the one who walked the lead ox team, he asked if they could just go ahead to the railroad.
We didn't see it, didn't know about it. We got to find a way to get out of here.
You from Laramie?
Some of us, and Cheyenne.
We went back and forth with that. And finally, one of them that could read and write, he put down the names of the outfit and who was in it, and I got the names of the ones in the company and the ones in the stagecoach where Jardine was riding. They agreed to come on back. We were only 2 or 3 miles from Doubtful.
I think you people have some burying to do.
There were a couple of fellers who were second in command, and they agreed, and that's how it worked out. One coach came back with me, and I let the rest of them poor devils go. Their life had come to a halt, and they had a tough row to hoe, figuring out how to get to Chicago or wherever them shows were put together. But they were all hardened show people, used to the worst, and I thought them gals could all get married in 24 hours if they wanted to stick around Wyoming, so maybe it wasn't quite so hard on them. They lifted poor Jardine gently and slipped him across the rear seat and covered him with a blanket. I borrowed that bullseye lamp, a candle inside of a glass container, and searched the area, looking for anything them bandits dropped or any piece of evidence, but it looked like a clean haul. They didn't get much. Jardine hadn't made more than a few dollars in Doubtful between getting fined by Judge Rampart and paying bills and dealing with them watching ward people. So that robbery wasn't worth more than some pocket change. And a man dead for it, too. There'd be another grave up there in the Doubtful burying ground, next to their advance man, Pinky Pearl. Now I had 2 murders to solve, and another robbery, and it didn't matter that I knew who done it, I couldn't prove a thing. I helped the Jehu turn the coach around, and we headed back to Doubtful, a real slow and sorry procession, death and misery in that coach. I led with that lamp, since it was so dark the driver couldn't see the trail. And we just rattled through a miserable summer night, ignoring mosquitoes, not even the crickets chirping, and pretty soon we rolled into Doubtful, which was blacker than I'd ever seen the place. I didn't know the time, but it was late,
and the town was slumbering and hoping that one lawman and one deputy could spare it from trouble. But trouble had come. I had a lot to do. I had them people wait in the jailhouse while I fetched Rusty out of his slumbers. He sure didn't like my hammering at his door, but pretty quick he was up, and I told him to look after those people and get statements from them and put that stuff down in writing. He could do that. I sure would be licking a pencil trying to get it down. Next was to wake up Maxwell and deliver the body of Alphonse Desjardins. That took more doing than waking up Rusty, and Maxwell refused to get out of bed.
Leave it on my doorstep.
You get your carcass over there and take it, or I'll leave you on your doorstep.
I don't bury theater folk.
Then I'll bury you. He sort of got the message. I finally got the Jehu to drive the coach over to Maxwell's place, where the undertaker looked Jardine over and was pretty ornery about it.
Shot through the mouth. I suppose that's fitting. That's how anyone in that business should check out. Talkers deserve it. Writers should get their hands shot off. Judges should get their private shot off.
Empty them pockets. Maxwell glared at me and slowly turned Jardine's pockets out. One of them contained a half-filled blue medicine bottle or something or other, but there wasn't any prescription label. I shook it a little, and the stuff seemed thick. Maybe he had some evil disease. He had some lucifers and an enameled tin with a small wad of cotton in it. That smelled odd. I collected all that stuff and put it in a flour sack and hauled it away from Maxwell's greedy fingers. The Jehu had put up the coach at Turk's and put the team in the pens, since no one was awake there either. By the time I got all that taken care of, Rusty had got all them victims settled in the jailhouse and was taking statements about what had happened. He sure could write pretty fine. He was sitting them at the desk in the lamplight and was getting their stories. He was interviewing with Ambrosia.
What's your name?
Margot Parvenu.
Rusty, he could write longhand, which was going to be a problem for me because I never could figure it out. Her story was the same as the rest. All their stories matched up. I asked him to stick around and bury Jardine, and after that I'd free him to go wherever they were going. They was a sorry bunch, sitting there in the light of a lamp while Rusty put down the story. I sure didn't know what to do with them. They might be witnesses if I could ever catch them renegades and get them before a judge. But they were also a long way from anywhere and wanting to get out of Puma County. I thought maybe if me and Ambrosia got hitched, she'd be around as a witness if I needed one.
You want to get married?
You're an idiot.
I thought maybe there'd be a way to cut these miserable folks loose.
Tomorrow you give sworn statements to our county attorney, Stokes is his name, and he'll let you go. Meanwhile, all we got here is some empty cells.
Them gals and the two fellers stared at me like I was about to lock them up and throw away the key.
Or I can try to get you into a boarding house, but that'll cost.
They decided on the cells.
Don't worry about them bedbugs. They ain't killed anyone yet.
The next morning, me and the show folk followed the black delivery wagon to the burial ground outside of Doubtful. Maxwell must have figured that Jardine didn't deserve a hearse, not if the county was paying, but at least he provided a pine box of green wood, still leaking sap, its top hammered down. Usually it was nothing but a canvas shroud if the county was paying. Maxwell's man had dug a 3-foot-deep grave over in the far corner, next to some graves of vagrants and the resting places of 3 bods. 3 feet was as low as graves got dug in potter's fields.
Any of you strumpets want to talk? I'll give you a minute or two.
Go to hell.
Ambrosia had found a dandelion along the way and gently set it on Jardine's pine box. The other ladies held hands and rubbed their eyes. The two gents from the show stared bleakly. They had all pulled deep inside of themselves as if the whole world was a cruel place they must endure.
Time's up.
He and his man slid the small pine box into the rectangle cut in the sod, where it landed roughly. It remained tilted, and no one straightened it. Then the hired man began dumping the yellow clay on it. I took my hat off.
You sure were a feller who knew how to make the girls look like heaven. Good luck to you in the next world. Maybe heaven is like the Grand Luxembourg Follies. I sure hope so, Mr. Jardine. Pretty soon, we all drifted back to Doubtful, and I told them they were free to go. Their own rented coach would take them to the railroad, and after that, who knew what? Maybe I should have told them that Lawyer Stokes would take sworn statements from them, but I didn't much feel like that. They'd been robbed by bandits, and I just decided to cut them loose. By the time Lawyer Stokes would have finished with them, he'd have turned them all into the perpetrators. Them show people, they were awfully happy to clamber in and get rolling out of Doubtful. This place had changed their lives forever. I was sorry about it all, but it wasn't much I could do to make life easier for them. I watched that coach roll out of Doubtful, sort of sorry to see it go. They were good company, them theater people. I discovered Ralston standing there and was glad of it.
You mind telling me how much money Jardine was carrying? You'd be the only one to know.
Nothing. With all those troubles, Jardine couldn't make expenses. By the time he paid me and the boarding places, he didn't even have enough to pay his company.
Well, what do you think them robbers took from that hidden compartment?
Beats me.
Did Jardine ever hint at anything?
He said it's a lousy business sometimes.
And now he's dead in a robbery that didn't net anyone anything.
Now, there may have been something. Those companies try to keep some emergency reserves on hand.
A little cash in that book?
Enough to tie them over to the next town.
Well, he got took.
Yes. And by bandits who had studied the company, knew where to look and when to strike.
I guess I know who. But catching them's the trick.
You've got a bank robbery, some holdups, two murders, and assorted thefts. And nothing's being done about any of them.
I got mad, but I tried not to let him see it. He abandoned me there and headed back to his opera house. I thought I'd have to get up a posse and try to find some tracks and see if I could close in on them too. I'd have to leave Rusty in town, holding down the sheriff duties. If I had Critter, I'd already be riding. But the thought of riding posse on that livery barn plug made my belly curdle up and belch. I headed for all them merchants. Hey, saddle up your nag, Sanders. We're going out as a posse.
I'll leave that to you, fellows.
Maybe Mrs. Sanders? I suppose she's a straight shooter.
Delphinium has a headache.
I tried a mess of other businessmen and got the same response. No posse duty. They had stores and offices to attend to. I could have required it, but I knew better than to take a bunch of carping and whining posse men out in the field. So I headed for the saloons, starting with Sammy Upward.
You want to get me a few posse men? Leaving an hour?
I'll try, Captain.
I headed for the sampling room and corralled Kronk, who dealt faro there.
No, sorry, Pickens. I'm out of cigars, and that'd keep me from going anywhere. I live on cigars. I'm epileptic, and without cigars, I go into conniptions, and they steal money off my table.
I headed for every establishment on Main Street. Harlan Kreutz, the baker, said he was too busy making dough. Magnus Thor, the hardware man, said he needed to fit out a sheep wagon. Conrad Drudger, the harness maker, said he was expecting a shipment of cowhide. Marshall Biergarten, the ice and coal dealer, said he'd promised to deliver 3 tons of bituminous to the assayer, Mike Michaels. Well, collecting a posse in Doubtful was a lot harder than I would have thought. All them people who were complaining about a crime wave and death and mayhem, and they wanted someone else to go out and get the county cleaned up. I hunted for my old deputies, DeGraff and Bertel, and they'd gone fishing. Maybe that was okay. I'd been wondering what side they were on. And if they were in favor of bass and carp and catfish, that might be better than siding with Delphinium. So I headed for Turk's livery barn, thinking maybe I could put a hobo or vagrant to work, but they were all gone, and Turk was unhappy. So I took Jesus Mary Joseph, a yellow sucker with missing teeth, and led him back to my office to load him up and tell Rusty he'd be acting sheriff for a while. Rusty was in there at my desk, studying that stuff I took out of Jardine's pockets. The flask of something thick and the enameled tin with some cottony stuff in it.
Ace was in. He was looking at this stuff here, what we got off Jardine, and he turned white.
Ace Grundy, the mining supply man?
Himself.
Ace had a yard outside of Doubtful where he kept mining equipment and had a bunker full of explosives.
He says this stuff in the bottle is nitroglycerin or blasting oil. It's a bit touchy. Dynamite is this stuff mixed with clay to stabilize it. And the stuff in the enamel tin is gun cotton. He says if the bullet that killed Jardine had hit him in the chest, where this stuff was stored in his breast pockets, it would have blown the whole wagon train to Kingdom Come.
Gun cotton? I'd heard a little bit about that. If you sneezed the wrong direction, it would go off. And Nitro wasn't far behind. So there was the head of a variety show carrying enough explosive to level Doubtful. It sure was a puzzle.
You got any idea why Jardine had turned himself into a walking bomb?
Ace said it's actually safer to carry it like that than to let it ride in a wagon and get jolted.
But why? What would a little French showman want with stuff like that? And why would he endanger his entire company?
Ace said it'd be pretty handy cracking safes. What's needed is a set of safe-cracking tools, drills, pry bars, wedges, whatever it takes to get some nitro between the door and the frame. But sometimes it's easier with gun cotton, carefully packed into whatever little space you've worked up to take the charge.
Alphonse Desjardins? Him with the stovepipe hat?
Rusty, he was grinning at me.
Don't set them items off. Don't even wave your hand near there. Don't get up to go to the outhouse. Don't move, don't talk, don't spit, don't blink an eye, don't think evil thoughts. Rusty, I'm not figuring you'll survive for long, not with that stuff on your desk and you enjoying it. You'll blow your ass to bits. But I gotta head out of town and bring in those two, and that means you'll be doing the sheriffing around here until I get back. If you blow yourself to bits, it's your own fault.
And who would you want me to blow up, Cotton?
Well, you can start with them supervisors and throw a judge or two into the bonfire. I collected the sawed-off scatter gun and a few cartridges of buckshot. Then I headed across the square to the beanery and had them give me a half dozen porterhouse steaks. I could eat good steaks for breakfast, lunch, and supper 2 days running and bill the county. Long as I was saving them posse salary, I figured I could cook some steaks on Puma County. I added a blanket and I was ready to roll. That yellow nag stood real quiet while I tied down my blanket and stuffed the steaks and spare shotgun shells into my saddlebag. But when I untied him, took hold of the reins, and stepped into the saddle.
Jesus, Mary, Joseph!
Jesus, Mary, Joseph turned quiet and was ready to go. I glared at Rusty, who was watching from the door of the jailhouse. Go get blown up. I rode off in a huff. I got out there to the holdup place in a bit. This time I had daylight to help me, and not some lousy candle lamp. Everything looked different, wide open. It wasn't flat at all. The road curled around a slope with a gulch on one side and hillside on the other. There wasn't any hiding place. Them two renegades just had to wait until it got real dark and then sit their horses until the show company rolled by. I found where they waited, back 100 yards so the wagon oxen and coach teams wouldn't pay them heed. They'd known to go for the rear coach, where Jardine kept the company cash. I found the place where they'd shot him. Brown blood caked the clay. They'd put a bullet into his face just like that. No reason for it. It was sheer luck that his gun cotton didn't blow when he hit the ground. Down in the gulch, off to one side, there were satchels and trunks around, untouched. They belonged to them showgirls and guys. I'd have to send someone out to pick them up. It was odd. The robbers didn't even touch them. The satchels got tossed into the gulch. Them hold-up men went after whatever lay in the bottom of the boot. I got off the yellow nag and tied him up, not trusting him. He'd probably trot clear back to Turks if I let him loose. I sprung open the first of them satchels to see what was in there. Some lady's undies, mostly, plus a robe and some stuff to paint her face. But wrapped in oilcloth was a big lump of something that was pretty firm. So I got it out and unrolled it, and found myself staring at a heap of greenbacks, some of them real big, 20s and 50s. Holy cats! I put that aside and dug into the next item, a leather trunk. Some feller owned it. There was a straight edge and a mug in there, a brush, some gray long johns, and some moccasins. And another of them oilcloth packets. And that one was all loaded with greenbacks too, but mostly fives and singles. This was a heap of cash. I looked around hard, not wanting anyone to show up just then, and decided maybe to move this stuff over to my nag. So I lifted all that cash with sweaty paws and lined it all up in my gray blanket. Two of the other satchels revealed the same oilcloth packets, and by the time I checked the rest, I figured I'd gotten all the bank's paper money back, or most of it. That sure made the owners of them bags and trunks look real guilty, but I thought I'd better not rush into any notions until I got things anchored down. Maybe they didn't know what was in the oilcloth. I hunted around, checking that luggage, but there wasn't any more. I thought maybe I had the greenbacks from the bank, but the gold was still missing. Maybe that's what them two crooks got. The gold would be heavy and make all them satchels too heavy, but it could be hidden down in that boot with a cover sewn over it, and a robber would hardly know the difference. But somehow, Iceberg and the butcher knew where to go. I got all that cash rolled into my blanket and tied down real good, and just in the nick. Coming at me was a mess of cowboys, probably off the Anchor Ranch, heading for a good time and doubtful. If they knew what I'd just hid in my bedroll, they could retire for life out in Arizona or some godforsaken place like that with nothing but cactus and thirst for company. Sure enough, it was some rannies I knew all too well. Big Nose George, Alvin Ream, Smiley Thistlewait, and Spittin' Sam. Howdy do. They was peering around at them satchels down the hillside. Coach got robbed last night. Them poor souls got themselves held up. I come out for a look-see. Hey, say, fellers, you could help me. I gotta get these bags back to town. They belong to the people that got held up. You mind piling them into your laps and taking them in? Spittin' Sam, he rode over to one satchel and peered in.
Undies? You want us to carry undies?
Belong to them showgirls from the Grand Luxembourg Follies.
That's what they wore? This here is Follies stuff?
They didn't wear much of anything. But if you fellers could help me, you'd be looked upon with special favor next time I have to lock you up on a drunken disorderly. Spittin' Sam eyed Big Nose George.
You want to carry ladies' undies to Doubtful?
I don't know.
Then Reem chimed in.
Hey, maybe we should help the sheriff.
And of course, Smiley had to add his 2 cents.
I'll take some undies. You peckerheads can take the ones with the razors and the shaving mugs.
I'm not going to take them. Give me corsets and nighties.
Well, they sure got to arguing about it. And I finally said I'd load them 2 trunks on my nag and walk him to town.
That's some horse, Sheriff.
None of your lip. I collected the 2 leather trunks and managed to tie them so they hung to either side of my saddle and started walking while them rannies accompanied me. The horse behaved himself, mostly because I was leading him. I hated to think what might have happened if them cowboys watched me mount that miserable nag. The gossip would never quit. It was a regular parade back to Doubtful, with the Anchor Ranch rannies each carrying a satchel or two and me walking that Turk nag. Little did they know what I was carrying. We got back to the sheriff's office and the rannies loaded the stuff inside. Rusty was sitting in there, smoking cigars and knocking the ash onto the enameled tin box that held the gun cotton, which made me turn green. The cowboys grinned and retreated. They didn't much care for local lockups, where they had spent more than a few hours.
I thought you were out pretending to be a posse.
I went to the site and found them bags. Had to bring them in.
Why? Those show people are gone.
Well, them bags are evidence. I'm thinking maybe the entire Grand Luxembourg Follies is a gang of thieves. Maybe even Ambrosia. Maybe those are her undies.
What are you, crack-brained?
The stagecoach robbers missed some loot because it was scattered through all those bags wrapped in oilcloth. Rusty knocked more ash on that enameled box.
Damn it, Rusty, you carry that box and that flask to the last cell and put them on the bunk. And leave your cigar right here.
Rusty carried them 2 bombs to the rear of the jailhouse and resumed chomping on his stogie. He tapped ash onto my desk and settled into my chair, looking smirky. I went out to Jesus Mary Joseph and untied the bedroll behind the cantle and carried it in. I weighed an extra 20 or 30 pounds with all that paper wrapped in there. I undid all the ties on my bedroll while he watched lazily. I stretched the bedroll on the grimy floor and slowly unrolled it until there were 5 oilcloth-covered lumps of something or other. And then I undid these. Rusty, he quit puffing and started staring. The first of them oilcloth caches revealed a stack of 50s and 20s, crisp green and brand new. The second doubled that. The third revealed a mess of 10s and 5s. The fourth, a bunch of singles and 2s.
Huh, where are the $3 bills?
Smart ass.
We could retire.
I sure hate to give them to Sanders, but I guess I have to.
Delphinium will kiss you.
Rusty, you're fired. You can't say something like that to me and expect to keep your miserable job. Get a pad and a pencil. You're going to count these.
You can count it yourself.
I only got 10 fingers. We set to work. By Rusty's count, there was $7,452 in there.
You've rescued Doubtful. But couldn't we spend a little over at Rosie's Palace of a Thousand Delights?
Maybe Delphinium and Hubert will give us a reward.
Am I fired yet?
Go fetch Sanders. I'm gonna sit here and guard these with my life.
You could get them out of sight, you know.
That was a good idea. I emptied all the undies out of a satchel and loaded up all them bills and took them back to the rear cell and set them down beside the black enameled case with the gun cotton and the flask of blasting oil and then locked the cell door. It must have took some doing to get Hubert Sanders to come in, but eventually he showed up with Rusty. He sure looked haggard and had great hollows under his eyes.
He was playing with his revolver and aiming it at his ear.
What's the meaning of this?
The Metropolis is rescued.